This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Kuritzen. Joining me, as always, Steve Smee.
Yes, sir. Good evening, everyone. We want to extend our condolences to our friends in Puerto Rico who really got hit hard by that hurricane. Everybody on the island has no power, so it's really bad.
We also have the Mason in the house. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It seems crazy what's going on in this world, but we're going to do our best and give you guys a great episode tonight.
I had a pretty crazy day. Thursdays, I TA, so Thursdays are really busy. There is not a single male in my class. Literally, the entire class is aged 20 to 25 year old women. It's the dream, man. Like I'm living the dream. Like the definition of it, that's my life. So.
Yeah, but you gotta be professional if you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't sleep during the semester, but I mean, like, the semester's only 3 months, man.
Yeah, goes by quick. I mean, if you find they find out you're dating one of your students, what would happen?
I wouldn't get fired, but it's frowned upon, right? Like, it's since we're both, it's not like a teacher dating a high school student, because that high school student would be underage, right? So like we're both of age, so it's not like we're doing anything illegal, but it's definitely frowned upon.
Yeah, I think it'd be unprofessional, you know?
It'd be unprofessional. They wouldn't really have a problem with it unless the relationship went south. You know what I mean? But yeah, again, like it wouldn't be professional. Like basically if I ever started dating one of the girls, I wouldn't make it official until after the semester. It's kind of like relationships in the workplace. Like it's not allowed, but it's just sort of frowned upon.
Yeah. It'd be like dating your boss, you know, out of pot. So what do we have for tonight? We have some really cool topics that were submitted.
Our first topic are ways to motivate yourself to go to the gym. I'll give a good tip. I love training. I've always loved training. For me, it's my stress relief. It's the only time during the day where I can turn off my brain. It's the only time during the day where I turn off my phone. I'm in my own little world for those 2 hours. But, you know, I'm human. It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes I just don't want to go to the gym for whatever reason. You know, I'm just burnt out. I didn't sleep very much the night before or something like that. What I'll do is I'll tell myself, go to the gym, just do 3 or 4 sets. If you go to the gym, if you do those first 3 or 4 sets, if you still don't feel like working out, then you know your body needs a break and you can go home. I can tell you 99.9% of the time, once I get to the gym, once I warm up, once I do those 3 to 4 sets, I'm in the zone. I'm ready to hit it. And I've had some of my best workouts on those days where I didn't even want to go to the gym at all. So that's my piece of advice. If you ever have one of those days where you just don't want to go to the gym, tell yourself, hey, let's just drive there. Let's just do 3 or 4 sets. You know, if after those first 3 or 4 sets, I still got nothing in the tank, my body needs a break, I'll take the day off. So that's my tip. Steve, I'll let you go, and then we'll see what the Mason says.
I mean, you got to go. You know, there's so many days I just don't feel like going. Today, I just felt like shit. You know, I felt bloated. I ate something. It upset my stomach. I think I had some soup, and it had some dairy in it. And actually, what it had in it was peas and stuff like that. And, you know, those are sometimes hard to digest on the body. So I think I was just bloated. And, but I was like, look, it's Thursday. You know, the weekend's coming up. Tomorrow, you know, I'm not going to be able to work out because it's date night. And then the weekends, you know, I might be able to work out one time, but I like to do other stuff on the weekends, other active stuff. So I was like, fuck, if I don't go today, I may not go back to the gym till Monday. So it's like, I gotta fucking go. I gotta burn some calories. I gotta do it if I wanna maintain, you know, my body. So what motivates me is music, good music. Finding new music really helps. If you go on YouTube, if you go on Pandora, there's different stations on Pandora. You can scroll through music. Sirius satellite radio, you can also listen to some channels on there, get some new music, put it on your little thing. The take really pumps you up, so you don't have to listen to that garbage they play at the gym. New clothes, new shoes, that can motivate you. That can kind of like give you something. Wearing a shirt that has like a slogan on it, that can motivate you. People at your gym, the peer pressure from guys, you know, the good looking girls that are at your gym that kind of push you to, you know, they're working their ass off. That pushes you to work even harder. There's all kinds of ways. And, you know, if all comes to worst and you're just having a real bad slump where you're not motivated to go to the gym, then find a new gym. You know, go and look at some other gyms in your area. Maybe that will light a fire into you. Just a fresh environment, a new atmosphere can kind of get you ignited, and that can get you motivated to go to the gym. How about you, Matt? What are some ideas that you've come up with?
Yeah, I mean, if it's just the one day, you know, the one-off here and there where you're just tired or you just don't feel like going, I think if you look at it from the guilt perspective, you're going to feel bad if you don't go. At night, you're going to be like, oh, like I'm kind of disappointed in myself. It's kind of like when you have that cheat meal, you know, you shouldn't have had, and then afterwards you regret it. It's the same thing. You know, you have that feeling of, you know, I should have just did it. It's not that hard. It's an hour out of my day. You know, who doesn't have that to put in? So I think you just, it's getting there, right? Like Trevor said, once you're there, you're fine. 99% of the time, you're going to have a good workout. It's just getting yourself to the gym. If it's more of a long-term thing, maybe refresh your goals. Sit down, plan something out, plan a phase that you're going to do. Go on evolutionary.org, start a log up. You know, logs can be very motivating. You get people behind you, supporting you. Find somebody on YouTube that, you know, they make videos about things that are interesting to you, and watch a whole bunch. Just binge watch fitness YouTube videos. Sometimes that'll get you, you know, amped up to train. Anything to get you, you know, kind of refreshed. And Steve gave some really good ideas, you know, like a new gym or clothes, those kind of things too. So just, you know, whatever's going to get you interested again.
Another really good tip is get a new workout plan. You know, you could either hire a coach. You know, most coaches will charge you maybe $100 to $200 for a new workout plan. That's exciting. You know, it gives you something fresh, something exciting, something new. You don't necessarily have to hire a coach. I mean, you could go on the web. There's so many logs on evolutionary.org. You could search that and do a workout plan similar to whatever someone's doing in their log. I've posted multiple logs where I post my workouts every single day. So, I mean, if you just search on evolutionary.org muskate log, if you search those two words, you'll be able to find like six different logs I did where I post my workout every single day for a couple months. So, I mean, lots of workout templates you can do. Mix it up, keep it fresh, keep it exciting. You know, the last thing you want to do is get in this routine where you're kind of just going through the motions. Not only is that going to make you not get any progress, it's just boring, you know? So, I mean, if you normally do the step mill for cardio, try the rower. You know, if you normally do quads and hamstrings and calves, try doing hamstrings before quads and then finish with calves, you know, just little things like that. If you normally train chest, shoulders, triceps, try doing chest and back together and then doing shoulders and arms, you know? Just little things like that makes a world of difference. Do you guys have any more suggestions before we move to our next topic?
Yeah, performance-enhancing drugs. You know, that can motivate you.
when in doubt, take drugs.
SARMs, cartarine.
Oh, I thought you were talking more like do a line of coke or something and get all hyped up.
No, performance-enhancing drugs like, you know, steroids, anabolic steroids. you know, a lot of people get motivated from that. You know, run a steroid cycle, run SARMs, you know, if you don't want to run anything like that, go to needthebuildmuscle.com, buy a ET generator, one of their supplements, creatine, something to kind of, you know, kind of give you a boost, you know, in the gym.
Yeah. I mean, trying a new supplement is kind of like the adult equivalent of trying a new toy. Another tip is on the days where you're really drained. I mean, I don't use pre-workouts daily, and I don't think you should use them daily, but I mean, you know, you could hit a pre-workout, on those days where you're feeling really low energy, or, you know, you could take like the ECA stack, or you could, take a caffeine pill or something like that. If you're a coffee drinker, you could, go to Starbucks and treat yourself to, you know, a nice espresso or something like that. So our next topic, Steve, I'll let you discuss this topic a little bit more, but I guess Jerry Ward said playing basketball isn't a form of cardio.
Yeah, the way you said it, I take it you disagree with him. So, he actually came out with a video, got strongly disliked. I don't know if he took it down or not, but in the video, he was basically bashing people for thinking that basketball was cardio. So, you know, it just depends on what your definition of cardio is. I think if you polled most people, they would say that basketball would be cardio. But I think what he was – maybe he was kind of trying to get a little cute with his rant, because he likes to do a lot of videos that rant. But I think that he was pretty much saying that – let's compare like an Ironman or a half marathon or marathon runner to basketball. Someone who runs half marathons, they're not going to train for their half marathon by playing basketball. That's not going to get you the amount of cardio that you need and endurance, increase your endurance enough to run a half marathon. As much as you want to believe it could, a lot of weightlifters actually think this. They think that weightlifting is the equivalent of running, and I can tell you it is not. I actually had a friend back when I was an endurance athlete. I was doing a 5K, like on the next weekend, and he was like, "Yeah, I want to come run it with you." I'm like, "Well, dude, you should probably train for this. You should probably do some running." And he would do running here and there. He'd do a lot of weight training, and he's like, "No, I'll be fine. I'll keep up with you." And I'm like, "Dude, trust me. Probably need to train for this for like at least like a few weeks or a few months before you actually run a 5K. So he came out and he's like, I'm gonna stay with you. Don't worry, I'll stay up with you. So after we got like 3/4 of a mile into it, which 5K is 3.1 miles, by the way, I looked back and he was walking. So he didn't even make it a mile before he started walking again because he couldn't keep up with my pace. So the thing is, like, no matter how much weight training you do, no matter how much basketball you play, you know, whatever, you can play football, baseball, hockey, whatever, it's not going to equal the amount of cardio that you actually get from actually running. So if you're going to train for a half marathon, you have to run to train for a half marathon. If you want to train for a long bicycle race, you need to bicycle. That's, I think, what Jerry Ward was getting at. That's my perspective on it. But I wanted to hear what you guys thought about it. Because on the surface, it seems like he's an idiot. He's saying something stupid. And I see that perspective because basketball is still better than sitting on your couch and doing nothing. But on the other perspective, as a former endurance athlete, I can kind of see maybe what the point he was trying to make. So I wanted to hear what you guys thought.
Matt, I'll let you go, and then I'll finish up.
Yeah, I can see both sides of that. I mean, basketball is cardio. Look at basketball players and look at the shape that they're in. They're all, for the most part, lean, lanky-looking guys. I mean, look at some of the best players in the world. You have Kevin Durant. I guess LeBron James might be the exception to the rule because he's built like a linebacker, but he's known for that for a reason. Most basketball players are pretty thin. It's a ton of running. Like, I used to play basketball as a kid, and that's probably one of the main reasons I stayed so skinny when I was little, just from being so active. So it's definitely cardio. Anything that gets your heart rate up like that is going to be cardio. You're going to be pouring sweat if you're playing hard. If you're just out there shooting around and dicking off with your friends, you know, that's different. That's not going to be cardio. But I do see the other side of it. you know, Steve explained it well. If your goal is to be running or to be, you know, in a triathlon or something like that, you can't prepare for it by playing basketball. That's not going to be sufficient. So I could really see both sides of it.
Yeah, like, I get what he's saying. I mean, I think, like, when most people talk about playing basketball, like, they're just playing, like, 21 or something like that. Like, they're not actually playing a game where you're sprinting back, you know, down the court and back and stuff. If you're playing an actual basketball game, like, it's definitely cardio. But, I mean, if you're just shooting some hoops outside with one of your buddies, like, that's not really cardio. That's kind of just, I'd say that's almost like a leisurely walk. Like, it's more just fun. But I get what he's saying is, like, it's kind of the same thing where someone says, like, oh, I don't train legs because I go running a lot. Like, if you go on a long run, your legs are going to be sore and they might feel the same as they would, you know, after a squat workout. But running isn't going to build you big quads the same way that squatting will. It'll build you, you know, functional athletic quads that, you know, you'll be able to run, you'll have good endurance, but you're not going to get big muscular development. So you basically got to train for your sport. I mean, if you want to get better at squatting, you don't practice throwing a baseball, you practice squatting, you know, and vice versa. If you want to get better at throwing a baseball, you don't practice doing jump squats, you practice throwing a baseball. So I get what he's saying. Yeah, I think we kind of addressed this topic. So our next topic, this is a really good topic. This is a topic that, you know, gets brought up a lot. Post-injection pain. What causes it? How to prevent it? What steroids are the worst for post-injection pain? We're getting into all of that. So I'll first talk about which steroids are the worst for post-injection pain. Generally speaking, short esters are worse for short injecting pain. Some of the steroids that are known for causing really bad post-injection pain, and post-injection pain is abbreviated as PIP. So if you ever see someone on like a forum or message board talking about PIP, that stands for post-injection pain. Test prop is really bad. Test suspension is really bad. Injectable Winstrol is pretty bad. Tren Ace is pretty bad. I would say out of all of them, test suspension is probably the worst. Steve, what would you say is the worst steroid for post-injection pain?
Yeah, test suspension, I would say was so bad that I used it twice. And I was like, I told my source, I was like, dude, I mean, this is, I can't inject this. I mean, I tried everything. I tried to mix it with stuff. The other one that's really bad was Farm Grade Primo, and it was Bayer. This was many years ago, and this stuff, you'd inject it, 2 cc's of this stuff, I'd inject it, and I would just, it was like motor oil. It was like injecting motor oil. It was so thick. Trying to get it through a 25 gauge needle would take forever. I mean, you'd have to push down on the plunger to get that shit through. And then I'd be like instantly on the ground in pain. It felt like you were getting stabbed. That's how bad it felt. And the pain took 3-4 days to, the soreness took 3-4 days to go away. So it just isn't practical to use that shit. Like, you have to figure out a way to kind of mix it with something else, or, you know, and dilute the shit out of it, like, to even inject that crap.
So, Steve, why would Primo Injectable, which has an enanthate ester, why would that cause post-injection pain? Because if you inject, you know, like, test enanthate or tren enanthate, I've never gotten post-injection pain from either of those, and it's the same enanthate ester. So why do you think Primo causes that post-injection pain and, you know, a different steroid with the same ester doesn't? Because I've heard the same thing. Do you think it's just Primo?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. It's the oil that they're using. You know, for some reason, Bayer uses that specific oil with the Primo and to inject it. But on the flip side, you know, it's not the Primo, though, because a lot of UGLs have since, you know, gotten Primo, and I've used these underground labs, the Primo that they've put out, and they're smart. and they actually use different types of oils. I think they use grapeseed oil or cottonseed oil. I'm not an expert on making steroids. I don't do any of that. I'm not interested in, making my own steroids or anything, so I'm not an expert, but the ones that I've used where they use grapeseed or cottonseed, the PIP has been really, really reduced to where it would be no different than using any other steroid, with the PIP. So
Steve, they can use any oil. It just has to be an oil with a high smoke point. Most labs will use either peanut oil or grapeseed oil just because they're very easily accessible and they're cheap. They're equally good. The only problem with peanut oil is a lot of people have a peanut allergy. So, I mean, if you're not allergic to peanuts, peanut oil and grapeseed oil would basically be equivalent. But most underground labs use grapeseed oil just because it's hypoallergenic. I'm going to say what the five main causes of post-injection pain are, and then we'll let the Mason go. He can give some tips on what he has found to help reduce post-injection pain. So first, the shorter the ester, the higher the melting point. The shorter the ester, the more post-injection pain. So test prop will have more post-injection pain than test sip or test enanthate. Second, the concentration of the gear. The higher the concentration, the more post-injection pain. So something like T400 is going to have more post-injection pain than something like test enanthate that's 250 milligrams per milliliter. Third, the solvents used. The more BA, the more post-injection pain. If you ever are using, like a test E or a test SIP that causes crazy post-injection pain, and it's from an underground lab, that underground lab is probably adding way too much BA to their product. BA, it's a preservative. It basically keeps the gear sterile. You don't need a lot of it. Because it's a preservative, it's toxic to your muscles. So it's not something that, you want a mega dose in your underground lab gear because, you're injecting basically a preservative into your body. So if you're ever getting really bad post-injection pain, that underground lab probably doesn't know what they're doing. They're adding way too much BA to their gear. The fourth cause is injecting too quickly. And the fifth cause is a virgin muscle. So those last two, very easy fixes. Inject slow, like don't rush. Do your injections when you're relaxed. I mean, it's not a race. I mean, no one really likes having a needle in their butt. But I mean, do it nice and slow. Slowly insert the needle. Slowly take it out. I've had clients and they said they got bad post-injection pain. And I asked them about their injection technique. And they're like, yeah, I just jam it in there. Like I try to get over with as fast as possible. I'm like, well, no duh. Like you're injecting yourself. Like you don't just jam that needle into your leg. Like you slowly ease into it. And then if it's a new muscle, it'll never have experienced the trauma of an injection before. So your first couple of injections of the muscle, you're always going to get some post-injection pain. It's completely normal. Matt, I'll let you hop in.
Okay, I think we've all heard of the guy who forgets to change the tip and he injects with the 18 gauge needle. That's always a shocker when they go ahead right with the harpoon. That's funny. But typically, what I've found to kind of reduce it is to warm it up a little bit, and I'd say maybe 10 minutes in just a cup of warm water, nothing too hot, just warm. And what I would like to do is while that's sitting there, I'll go have a shower in the morning while I'm getting ready. And for me, I feel like that loosens up the muscles. And that way, when I get out and I pin normally, I don't ever have issues. So I feel like that helps me. I'm not a big fan of like having to train the muscle that day. I don't feel like that's ever done anything for me. So if it is that day, then I'll train. If not, it's not. As far as like massaging or anything, I will do maybe a minute or so, but that's about it, just to make sure it's kind of in there. Whether that does anything or not, that's kind of just what I do, and that always seems to work. I've never iced or anything like that. I don't know, if that would help, but I guess I've never really had it severe enough to require that. I guess quads are probably the worst that I've experienced, where you kind of feel like you got hit really hard. You got a really nice bruise. So that's another thing, would be to find the spots that work best for you. Some guys will just stick to glutes because it's easy. It's a big muscle and you rarely will get any pip there. Quads are tricky. If you find the right spot for you, they can be really easy because everything's in front of you. You can see what you're doing. You know, you're not having to reach around and, you know, possibly be, you know, a little bit shaky trying to look at the mirror and that. I know a lot of guys are successful with delts and pecs, lats. So stick to those muscle groups. I wouldn't try anything like calves or biceps, triceps. I hear a lot of pain with those areas. So it's about trying out different spots, seeing how you respond, and then rotating as much as you can. So that way you're not just beating up the same muscle over and over and over again. Then you're just going to end up with scar tissue, and that can be painful. Once you have scar tissue and you keep pinning through that, that can be painful as well. So you'll want to avoid that.
Steve actually gave me a really good tip. He said you should inject post-workout in the muscle you trained, because that muscle will be really warm and there'll be good blood flow there. So, I mean, if you just did legs, you know, maybe do glutes, or if you just did shoulders, maybe inject shoulders, or if you just did, you know, back, maybe inject lats. Steve, do you have any final tips before we go into our last, our next topic?
I would definitely not inject like right when you get up in the morning into a cold muscle, because that muscle doesn't want to be injected. So part of the reason for PIP is the muscle. Like, you got to understand your muscles. Also, certain muscles don't like to be injected. I've noticed my right delt does not like to be injected, but my left delt does. I've noticed that my left quad doesn't like to be injected, but my right quad does. It's so weird, because certain muscles, you put the pin in there and your muscle just doesn't want it. So if it doesn't want it, just don't force it. Just don't inject it in there. Find other spots around your body that you like. My pecs, both my pecs are happy being injected. So I do my pecs, you know. So it's like you got to find different muscles. And I think a warm muscle is going to accept that needle better than a cold muscle. Just wake up in the morning and that's the first thing you want to do. So that's what I've noticed. So that would make your injection a lot less of a hassle.
What Steve said is really true. You know, what's interesting about me is I'm very, very lean. So there's like zero fat on my glutes. Glutes for me, if I inject them, I get crazy post-injection pain and my glute just gets knotted up and it's so bad. Sometimes I'll even like throw my lower back out. My glute gets so tight. But when I inject quads, no problem. No problem at all. I could do a quad injection every single day and not have issues. So it's really individual. And it's like Steve said, you know, kind of figure out which injection sites work best for you. So our next topic is stomach bloating. You know, this is something a lot of people suffer from. And not only is it uncomfortable, it's unattractive. So I just wrote a pretty in-depth article for Numa Models. If anyone wants that article, just send me an email. I'll happily send it to you. But I'm basically going to cover the four main reasons that, you know, you're experiencing stomach bloating, and they're very, very easily preventable. So the first reason is a food sensitivity. So a food sensitivity is kind of like a mild food allergy. Although it's not as severe as a food allergy, you're basically eating a food that your body doesn't like. And whenever that happens, it causes an inflammation response, which leads to bloating, indigestion. So that's the most common one. The most common food sensitivities people have are gluten, dairy, and soy. So if you're always feeling bloated, try eliminating those three foods from your diet and see how you feel. The second one is not enough fiber in your diet. What's really cool about fiber is a carbohydrate, just like other carbohydrates. But the sugar molecules are bound so tightly together that the human digestive tract can't break them apart. So it basically passes through your digestive system intact. So it gives your body a good internal scrubbing. So it basically keeps you regular, prevents bloat. Most people don't get the recommended 20 to 30 grams of fiber per day. The easiest way to add fiber to your diet is use a fiber supplement. something like psyllium husk. Just get an unflavored psyllium husk powder. It's basically pure fiber. It's very, very cheap. Third reason, candida and lack of probiotics in your diet. So most people have yeast overgrowth in their intestines and they don't get enough probiotics. Yeast thrives on a diet high in refined sugar and refined carbohydrates. And then no one eats fermented foods. So increase your consumption of fermented foods, things like sauerkraut, things like kimchi. Kefir water is great, things like that. And then limit sugar and refined carbohydrates, you know, things like white bread, white pasta as much as possible. And the last one is not detoxifying regularly, you know, not fasting. You know, we just had a really great guest on our last episode, Dr. Gary, talking about fasting. You know, if like what people don't realize is your digestive tract is 15 meters long. You know, it's very, very long. It's so easy, you know, for food and, you know, fecal matter to get backed up and just plug that whole system along. So when you detox, you kind of clear everything out and make sure everything's running smoothly. So I basically hit the four main points. Matt and then Steve, do you have anything you want to add? Any questions or comments to what I just said?
I mean, the one that I think of, it's more common outside of bodybuilding with people that aren't as serious, but it's beer. Like you see people, they have, you know, you're out and you know, you're at a party, you see people have a couple drinks and all of a sudden it looks like they're half pregnant. So I don't know whether that's the yeast or the alcohol itself, but you see people get super bloated. Yeah. Makes sense. Super bloated on that. Other than that, the only thing that gets me, and I completely avoid it now, is whey concentrate protein powder. I've never been very sensitive to lactose or dairy. It's not something I try to consume, but it's never caused an issue. But if I have a shake that's whey concentrate, my stomach will blow up, and then within 5 minutes, I need to shit. Like, I need to get it out of me. So that's another one that seems to get me. The rest of that makes a ton of sense, that it would be the refined sugars and things like that. But, you know, most of you guys out there, hopefully you're keeping your diets clean and, you know, you're not experiencing a ton of that.
The whey concentrate, that'd be from the lactose. So yeah, that's 100% correct. It's basically the problem with dairy isn't the dairy itself. It's the sugar in the dairy, the lactose. You know, most humans don't produce the lactase enzyme anymore. And the lactase enzyme is basically what breaks that lactose molecule into galactose and glucose. So because you don't produce enough of that lactase molecule, that lactose isn't digested and then it just causes inflammation and bloating and things like that. So yeah, when I said dairy, I meant like commercial dairy. Most people who are sensitive to dairy can still consume a whey isolate shake with no issues.
Yeah, but Trevor, dairy is still inflammatory, even if you do take like a lactase enzyme or you're not lactose intolerant. So you're saying that dairy isn't inflammatory?
Not, it's inflammatory if you have a food sensitivity to it. 95% of the people who have a food sensitivity to dairy have a food sensitivity to lactose. Some people like you, you're that 5% who has a food sensitivity to the dairy proteins. That's different, but I'm just talking most people. And I mean, Steve, like we read forum posts like this every single day. Most people, they're using a whey concentrate. They switch to a whey isolate.
Wait, but let's say, no matter what, you take a lactase enzyme and you eat like a tub of ice cream, you're saying that's not going to bloat you? Because I would argue it would, even if you could digest lactose. So I think like certain foods as a whole, I think like even gluten, even if you're not.
So gluten. What, this is kind of a different topic in itself, but the problem with North American dairy is the fact that it's full of hormones. The cows are fed absolute crap. It's just like a polluted, processed, disgusting food, right? So it's not the dairy itself. It's the fact that you're consuming dairy from sick cows that have been fed nothing but genetically modified soy. I mean, if you made real organic ice cream that came from, you know, grass-fed cows, you know, you used organic organic evaporated cane juice, you know, it was all natural. You weren't using artificial vanilla, you're using actually real vanilla bean. I bet you could eat that with no problems whatsoever. So that's kind of what I'm getting at. But yeah, it's a very complicated topic.
Yeah. I think though, bloating, a lot of guys, you know, it's kind of scary. Even like if you go to the gym's supposed to be like the fittest people in our community. And like, you can't find a guy who doesn't have a gut. Even at the gym, you can't find a guy who doesn't have a gut. So, you know, it has a lot to do with a lot of things, but it really boils down to we're eating too much food. We're eating way too much fucking food. And I think if people were to actually like sit down and calculate how much food they're eating, it would be shocking how many calories people are getting in one day. And it would blow their mind. There are people that are eating 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 calories a day. No fucking problem.
Steve, I actually just read a fascinating article on this. I'll try to find the link so I can send it to you. I don't know if you're able to access it without a university login. But basically, they looked at what you were saying, you know, because basically most people, you ask them, you know, why are we fat? It's because we eat way too much and we don't move enough. They looked at how much humans are eating compared to how much humans ate 100 years ago. Our volume of food consumption has not changed. You know what has changed? The amount of calories we're consuming by beverage. It's all of the pop. It's all of the fancy coffees. It's all of the, you know, Slurpees, things like that. If you look at the amount of food we're eating, it actually hasn't changed. It's all the hidden calories people are taking in every day that they're not even thinking about. It's that glass of juice with breakfast. It's that coffee at lunch that has, you know, 6 shots of vanilla syrup and, you know, milk added. It's that energy drink that you take after work before the gym that has 70 grams of sugar in it. That's where all the calories are coming from. We're actually not eating more than we did 100 years ago. We're drinking.
How is that? So 100 years ago, during like, let's say, you know, the Depression happened in the 30s. So let's say, you know, 80 years ago. So you're telling me during the Depression, people ate the same as people eat today? How is that even economically plausible of an argument to make? That doesn't even make any sense. People during the Depression were barely eating any food. They were starving. Their crops were dead. So I don't understand where you're getting that from. Like how,
like you have to compare apples to apples. They looked at people of the same economic standpoint. They looked at people who were financially stable. You can't compare a homeless person to, you know, a multimillionaire. I mean,
right. Well, I mean, I'm saying for the, you know, like the normal person that I'm, you know, example I'm giving, but like, okay, let's take the human being, the weight. Back in the 60s and 70s, men average weight was about 20 or 25 pounds less than they are today. That's just a fact. But like heart disease is way up, cancer is way up, diabetes is way, way up. And, you know, we're just eating too much fucking food now. And that's causing the gut. Like today I ate a lot and my gut was, you know, bulging up. I ate way too much today. I was way over my caloric deficit surplus. So, I mean, it's just like in days when I don't eat so much, my stomach goes down. So I really think that we're eating too much fucking food. But yeah, beverages too, obviously. We're drinking too much. And there's a lot of hidden stuff. But like there's a lot of hidden shit in our foods. The butters, the oils, the other stuff that they're adding is really a problem. But you cannot find a guy over 40 who doesn't have a gut anymore. It's impossible. And this is a really bad epidemic that we're seeing. And
so if you look at the way that people eat now compared to what they used to, So this is like, I'm somebody that works within the realm of the food industry. And I will tell you that people don't eat as a family anymore. And when you don't do that, you lose your good, wholesome, prepared meals. And dinner is the worst. Dinner kills people. So, you know, back in the day, you used to sit down and you'd have a nice meal. You'd have your chicken and, you know, mom would always make sure you ate your broccoli, that kind of stuff. Now, it's all restaurants. Restaurants have taken off. They are exploding with the business they do. And like Steve was getting at, a steak today, compare that to a steak 100 years ago, I guarantee you they weren't cooking with the amount of butter and all the shit that they put in it. And there weren't the hormones and that kind of stuff in the meat. Like the volume of the steak may be the same, but the makeup of it is shit compared to what it used to be. It's terrible. And on top of that, we've depleted our soil so much that even when we are eating, you know, our vegetables and that kind of stuff now, we're not even getting half the nutrients we used to. So the quality of the foods, even, you know, of the healthy food is even going down.
I'm gonna say one more thing and we'll move into our next topic. What you said, Matt, is 100% true, but there's another underlying problem there that you forgot to mention. The problem is now we're always eating on the go. We're eating in front of the TV. We're eating in front of the computer. We're eating on the smartphone. No one sits down, has a family dinner, eats, enjoys the meal, enjoys company, and mindfully eats. When you eat while you're on the computer, and I mean, I do this too. I'm guilty too. You don't even notice that you're eating. You know, your brain, it doesn't clock into your brain because you're too preoccupied on the emails you're replying to or the Facebook messages you're sending or something like that. It takes about 20 minutes for your brain to signal that satiety signal. So, I mean, if you're scarfing something down while you're watching TV, you'll eat way more than you should. And then if you were to eat slowly, if you were to mindfully eat, and study after study has shown this, they basically put an unlimited amount of food in front of people, had one people in a room where there's nothing. It was basically just white walls. And then another group of people where they were in front of a TV and that TV was showing a movie or a TV show or something like that. The group that was watching the TV ate literally almost double as much as the group that was eating in front of a white wall. And I mean, it's completely true. Try it yourself. Try eating dinner staring at a wall. It's pretty boring. I mean, after eating for about 10 minutes, you're like, okay, I'm done. I want to go see what's going on. Like I got emails. I got stuff to do. Like if you mindfully eat, you realize you really don't need that much food. You know, like after you eat, you know, a decent portion, you're like, okay, I've had enough. Time to do the next thing.
Yeah. TV is the killer. Snacking during the game, snacking while you're watching TV is a real killer. The best thing you can do is get rid of your TV, frankly. But I mean, how can we, you know, we want to watch our shows. We want to watch our sports. So that's my biggest enemy. Cause when I watch TV, I want to snack on nuts and seeds and fruit and popcorn and shit like that. That's where I get myself into trouble, is the snacking part. So what I do is I just don't keep snacks in my house anymore, because if I do, I'm going to go to the kitchen and get a snack and sit in front of the TV and snack, like Trevor said. So there is a mental aspect where your brain doesn't realize it's getting food while you're watching TV, and that's killing us, and we're not realizing. I mean, snacking on popcorn, you can eat a bag of popcorn or a bag of chips. That's like 600 calories right there that you're getting just from that bag of popcorn or bag of chips, not even a big bag of it. And then, you know, nuts and seeds and raisins, a half a cup of that shit is like, I don't know, 200-300 calories, maybe even more. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a killer.
No one's snacking on celery sticks. You know, maybe I would, but I mean, I'm the 0.1%. People are snacking on things they shouldn't be eating. So yeah, snacking, watching TV, it's just terrible. Our next topic is the Olympia. Phil Heath won. No surprise, Big Ramy got second, William Bonnet got third. as you know, any, if you're interested in the results, you can just Google it. What we really want to talk about is the fact that no one cares about bodybuilding anymore. It's kind of depressing for me because I love bodybuilding, but the day the bodybuilding show was going on, and this is the Mr. Olympia, this is the biggest bodybuilding show in the world, this is the equivalent of like the Super Bowl or the Stanley Cup Finals, I was talking to guys at the gym. I'm like, so who do you think is going to win the Olympia? And they're like, I didn't even think about it. I'm like, you know, it's today, right? Like, you know, the finals start in a couple hours. And they're like, oh, I didn't know it was today. Like, people really don't care about bodybuilding at all anymore.
Except was it on Sunday, Trevor? Was it last Sunday?
It was on Saturday.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if it was on Sunday, no one gives a shit in the U.S. because we're watching football, you know? And so
Saturday morning was the prejudging, then Saturday night was the finals. But yeah, no one cared. It was it's pretty depressing.
What channel? What was it on TV? Was it live on TV?
It was on TV. It was streamed on Amazon.com though.
Yeah, so I mean, where can we even watch? I honestly didn't even know what was going on. To be honest with you, I mean, I always wonder though about Mr. Olympia. Everyone like gives their predictions on who's gonna win. How can you predict that? Like, what happens if the guy shows up, you know, and he had a bad week or something? Like, I don't understand.
Well,
that part.
It's the same thing with football. I mean, you know, Tom Brady is one of the greatest quarterbacks, but he could have got food poisoning the day before, you know, or something. Like, you know, stuff happens. But basically, leading up to the show, people will post progress pictures and things like that, so you can kind of see how they're looking.
Right. So everyone said that Phil Heath would win, and he was a huge favorite. So why watch it? I think that's one of the problems right there for something like this, is he wins it every year. There's no excitement. Like, so,
yeah,
you know, so why even pay attention? And Big Ramy, you know, he was second and it wasn't even close. Apparently, like it wasn't even a competition. Like, Phil Heath won it fair and square. It was over. And so, I mean, it's different than football. You're comparing it to football. Well, Tom Brady in New England, they played the Chiefs week one. They got their asses kicked and they're the Super Bowl champions. So football, you know, you don't know who's going to win. It's exciting. It's unpredictable. And you're watching the game progress. But if bodybuilding is all about like, okay, Phil Heath's favored to win and he's going to win and he wins, where's the excitement? So I think that might be one of the problems right there.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add. I agree with you. The sport's dying. What's interesting though is Dwayne The Rock, his company AMI, bought the IFBB and bought the Mr. Olympia competition this year. So he might, you know, clean house and try to make bodybuilding popular again. But as the sport's heading right now, it's just dying a slow death. Matt, what are your thoughts on this? We'll get into our last topic.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, if some of the competitors did other things outside of compete, if you knew them from mainstream, you know, maybe if they were actors or something like that, if you were aware of who they were, like if The Rock was a competitive bodybuilder, people would pay attention. Simple as that. And then I think just from the actual perspective of what they look like, you know, everything's new and exciting until it's not anymore. And I think the guys being freakishly big, like we've seen it now. It's not changing, so it's not exciting anymore. So all of a sudden you have everybody saying Arnold, you know, they all want the Arnold look again. They want the physique look, you know, and I agree. I like that look better. And the thing is, most of us, like, you know, genetics aside, we can achieve that kind of look a lot easier than we could achieve the Phil Heath look. So, you know, it'll bounce back and forth until people get sick of it.
I'm going to say one more thing, then we'll move into our last topic. Just to show you how much people don't care about bodybuilding, when Rich Piana was put in that coma, and then when Rich Piana died, over the course of that week, I'd say there was probably 50 new threads posted on evolutionary.org. 50 to 60. You know, at least every day there was, you know, five or six threads being posted. You know, people wanted to know Rich Piana's update, how he was doing, you know, what was going to happen with the supplement company, all that sort of stuff. There's not a single thread posted about the Olympia. So, I mean, in evolutionary.org, like, that's a pretty hardcore forum. You know, like, most of the people on there are using steroids. They're, this isn't, you know, like a CrossFit forum. This isn't bodybuilding.com. So the fact that no one there cared about the Olympia just goes to show you
bodybuilding. Where's the marketing though? Rich Piana, he has 2-3 million followers on Instagram. He's got millions of followers on YouTube, et cetera, who subscribe to him. Where's the marketing in bodybuilding to let us know that there is a bodybuilding competition even coming up? Where they have a responsibility to get a network to show it on TV. And if so, they have a responsibility to get people to watch the show on TV. The question is, will people watch it on TV? I'll the answer is probably not.
I'll tell you why it's dying, and then we'll move into our next topic because we only got 10 minutes left here. Flex Magazine is owned by Weider, and up until this year, they owned the Mr. Olympia competition. Flex Magazine is just a print magazine. They don't even have a forum. That's how behind the times this is. I mean, what online what magazine doesn't have a forum? I mean, that's the reason it's dying, is because there's no social media, there's no forums, there's no interactions. It's like you said, all they do is they advertise in print magazines, but no one reads print magazines anymore. I couldn't even, yeah, it's a depressing topic for me because I'm a bodybuilding fan, but.
Well, if there's no money in marketing it, you know, then there's no point in marketing it.
There's no money in marketing it.
So there's no incentive to do that. There's marketing in social media because these guys are selling their cookie cutter supplements. They all have a whey protein, a BCAA, a pre-workout, a post-workout, blah, blah, blah. They all sell that shit and they make a little money like that. So that's their incentive to market it. But where's the marketing to market bodybuilding? There is none.
I agree with you. Okay, so our last question, we got a listener question. He basically wants to know how to run a cycle with Sustanon. So this is a great topic. This is a topic there's a lot of misconfusion on. So Sustanon, it is a testosterone ester blend. Even though there are some short esters in there, even though there is a little bit of test prop, it's primarily long-acting esters and is actually developed so that you only need to inject it once every 2 weeks. So basically you would treat Sustanon as you would test the year test sip. If you're running a cycle with it, you basically inject it twice per week. You only really need to inject it once per week though. So if you're using it for TRT, just inject it once per week. I personally would stick with test E or test sip just because that little bit of test prop in the Sustanon can cause some post-injection pain. And if you're getting, you know, pharmacy grade, Sustanon, which is called Omnidrin, they use peanut oil, and a lot of people are allergic to peanuts. But that's kind of just my 2 cents. Matt, give your thoughts, and then we'll let Steve, the steroid guru, finish this topic up.
Yeah, I would treat it like a long ester. Out of the 250, 160 milligrams of that are, you know, between, you know, say 10 and 15 day half-lives. So really the bulk of it is a long ester. I think the reason there's confusion is because there is that, you know, tiny little bit of prop in there, guys come on the forums and they think that they need to run it every other day. You can, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's really not going to be necessary. I mean, if you're running it, you know, on a 12-week cycle, twice a week is going to be plenty. Even if you were to miss it and you could only do once a week, you'd still be fine. So I think ideally I would do, you know, twice a week.
Yeah, let's remember it's four different esters. It's only 30 milligrams of propionate. So a lot of guys get confused, and you see on forums, it's a never-ending struggle just to outlast the parroting and the cookie cutter posting where people want to keep saying that Sustanon needs to be injected every other day or every day or whatever. It's only 30 milligrams propionate. It's 60 milligrams phenylpropionate. It's 60 milligrams isocaproate. And then it's 100 milligrams, which is the most, of deconate, which is a very long ester, 15-day half-life. So you should treat Sustanon. The way Sustanon was designed for TRT. So it's designed to where you inject a large amount. Instead of injecting 200 milligrams a week of cypionate or enanthate, you inject, say, 500 milligrams all at once, okay? And then you don't have to inject again for like 3 weeks. That's how Sustenance was designed. So each ester kind of picks up after one another. So another name for Sustenance in Europe is Omnidrin. And Omnidrin used to have different esters. Now it's the same thing. Omnidrin and Sustenance are the same esters. That's another thing on forums guys want to argue about, because they're like, oh, Omnidrin is something different. No, it's exactly the fucking same. And Omnidrin is also used for TRT in Europe. So, you know, it just depends. In my opinion, Sustenance, the post-injection pain on it is there versus cypionate or enanthate, which are very smooth injections. So for me, I don't have any use for Sustenance personally. So it all boils down to, look, your source. If your source has awesome Sustenance and it, you know, you've used it and you're like, man, this shit's awesome, then roll with it. But I mean, if you're going to tell me what would I use, I would go with cypionate or enanthate if I'm going to use a long ester of testosterone every time. But a lot of people say that, hey, you know, enanthate is better, cypionate is better. It really boils down to your source, because so many sources have underdose gear. So the number one question is, who's your source? What do they sell? How good is their gear? That's the number one question. Then from there, you can pick a different, whichever testosterone you want. So that's the most important thing. But it's, you know, it's a really good question, because a lot of newbies don't understand. They think Sustenance is not testosterone. They think it's something totally different. So you'll see guys saying, I want to run Sustenance and with testosterone cypionate. And it's like, okay, well, Sustenance is testosterone too. So it's really confusing, and it doesn't help because so many people post on forums and they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. You know, so that's a thing. So the bottom line is, inject Sustenance once or twice a week. You don't have to inject it every other day or every day, like some guys say. So that's a thing.
It's been another good episode, guys. On our next Q&A episode, I'm going to do a 10-minute segment on what half-lives are and what detection times are, because there's so much misinformation about this. I think it'd be a really good segment just to kind of clear up all the misinformation out there, because a lot of people get the half-life and detection time totally mixed up. While we were recording the show, I just got a listener question. He basically said he read on a forum that since EQ has a long half-life, do you have to do a 16-week cycle of EQ? I mean, obviously that makes no sense whatsoever. So we'll answer that question on the next episode. And on the next episode, I'll do a 10-minute segment explaining scientifically exactly what a half-life is, what a detection time is, what that means to you, what it means to injection frequency, all that sort of stuff. It's been another good episode. Keep the listener questions coming, guys. We really appreciate it. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, for my second co-host, Matt, also known as Masonic Bodybuilder on the forums, it's been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life. Look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Thank you.